AARP has come out with a new study which certainly gives baby boomers pause, because as more of us that are in that cohort age, there are going to be fewer people to take care of boomers. Why? Because boomers have had fewer kids. So you've got this huge aging population bubble without as many younger people. Plus, there are other economic factors that come into play, and boomers are expected to live longer than the generation that precedes. With us to talk about the challenge is Donald Redfoot, who is with AARP's Public Policy Institute. He's lead author of the study, The Aging of the Baby Boom and the Growing Care Gap. Don, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, Larry.
I shared just a few of the challenges that are here, but please quantify how big a challenge are we looking at?
Well, let me start by just how important and how big the magnitude of family caregiving is right now, because in previous research, we estimated that if you had to pay caregivers to replace family caregiving, it would cost more than $450 billion a year. That's more than the entire cost of Medicaid. So family caregivers have been the crucial backbone of long-term care historically, and they continue to be so. And indeed, over the last 20 years, we've reaped a bonanza from the baby boomers aging into the caregiving years, when their own parents, who represent a much smaller cohort, there have been relatively more caregivers in recent years. Indeed, in 2010, there were 7.2 people in the care, what we call the caregiving age, the 45 to 64 year olds.
Yeah.
7.2 for every person 80 plus. That, however, is going to plunge to 4.1 over the next 20 years, as we find the boomers aging themselves, and with fewer, as you mentioned, fewer younger family members coming on to provide care for them.
So not quite half of the available pool of potential caregivers to take care of aging family members. And what percentage of the care, I don't know whether it be hours-based or whatever, is done by family versus those that can afford to have professional care?
Well, there have been various estimates of that, and perhaps Kathy Kelly, your other speaker, will speak to that. But we estimate something on the order of 80% of long-term care is provided by family caregivers.
Because professional care, I'm assuming, I mean, if you're talking away from, skilled nursing facilities, you're talking about only people that would have, actual enough money to pay someone, or long-term care insurance, which isn't, I wouldn't think, a very big group. Those are the ones that would be able to have pros in the home, right?
Well, yes, but even those who can afford it, families see that as part of their responsibilities. Most family caregivers don't even think of themselves as caregivers. It's just what you do to help mom. And so people do that at all economic levels, but you're correct that obviously those who have more means have more options in terms of getting help to supplement family caregiving.
We're talking with Donald Redfoot from AARP's lead author of the report, The Aging of the Baby Boom and the Growing Care Gap. It looks at the future decline in the availability of family caregivers. What is that going to mean for baby boomers? If you have questions or comments, we're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. If you're a boomer, is this something you're already concerned about and trying to figure out? If you're in a subsequent generation, are you trying to figure out, how you're going to deal with this of an aging parent? 866-893-KPCC, AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Also with us, Kathleen Kelly, Executive Director of the Family Caregiver Alliance. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So we're seeing this larger pool of potential family caregivers start to dry up over time. What are the other options? What do you think is going to happen for those who need care?
Well, I think this is a topic of conversation. We work directly with family caregivers here in California and across the country, and there's actually two kinds of conversations going on. One is for baby boomers that are caring for an older relative, most typically their parents, it's what can I do in terms of providing that coordination, that direct care, and what are the resources in the community and how do I plan for the future on behalf of my parents. The second conversation that's going on among baby boomers, who, especially those who have been faced with making these kinds of decisions and assistance to their parents, is what's going to happen to me? And we know that there's these big trends that are playing out, demographically, as Donald's report has shown, that there's going to be less informal support in the future at the exact time that the healthcare system is saying, we can provide care at home, cheaper, we can bend the cost curve and all of those kinds of conversations. But that's making the presumption and the assumption that there's going to be informal care there that's going to pick up the charge.
Well, as we continue, I want to talk about particular policies that you think might be helpful to encourage a smaller pool of people to step up and to provide that kind of family care. I welcome your calls, 866-893-KPCC. Hetty Lynn Hurdies has the news. We know the baby boom generation is a big population bubble, but above and beyond that, they're almost certainly going to live longer on average than any generation that has succeeded them, and they have fewer kids than preceding generations. So that means a potential crisis in caregiving. Who's going to take care of baby boomers as they age? A new study from AARP attempts to quantify that. With us from AARP is Donald Redfoot. Also with us is Kathleen Kelly of the National Center on Caregiving. So with this increasing stress on the smaller pool of family caregivers, what kinds of public policy changes do you think would help to support family caregiving?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to start thinking differently. And by that, I mean we need to start thinking when we're dealing with disability and illness and old age, we have to start thinking about not just that individual person and how to serve the needs, but also about the social context in which they live, and especially their family caregivers, that needs to be the unit of service that we think about when we think about providing a plan of care for a person who is facing disability and old age. And so that means involving caregivers in the assessment process and finding out what their needs are as they address their older loved ones' needs. It means making sure that they are treated as part of the caregiving teams so that doctors don't just dismiss family caregivers but involve them actively, because they are going to be the front line of caregiving. It means providing adequate training and support so that family caregivers, who are often called upon to do not just regular housekeeping or that kind of service, but are called upon to do very complicated healthcare-related services, so that they get the training they need and the professional backup. And it means revising some of our workplace policies, too, to be more supportive of family caregivers who are often balancing the demands of work and family. So it requires rethinking about the whole delivery system to make it much more person and family centered rather than service and institution centered. Mm.
Kathleen Kelly, you were mentioning, and we certainly hear this many times, that it is less expensive to keep an aging person in the house than have them in institutional care. So are there things in terms of public policy, governmental policies that could be changed to help reinforce that?
Well, I think there's, Donald laid out the basis of the policy changes, but we also need to recognize that when families or friends are caring for somebody, they oftentimes will have to reduce their hours or quit their job in order to provide that kind of care. And in doing so, they have lost their, retirement planning capabilities, Social Security credits and accrual and those kinds of issues, and the financial impact can be quite significant. So we need to find ways in order to knit together a safety net for that individual who is choosing to give up his or her livelihood to provide care.
Well, I wonder about trends there demographically, because if historically this is something that women took on more than men, and women were making less in the household if you had stay-at-home moms and then transitioning to taking care of parents when they age, now you have women taking on a much bigger share of income in the home. So if they're not, they don't necessarily have the flexibility to go take care of mom and dad that they would have had in the past. And how do you deal with that, Kathleen?
That's correct. And the family ultimately, as Donald pointed out, that the family ultimately is the coordinator of care. They're de facto the what we call the case manager. And in this instance, really consulting with, I think a professional to bring the family together to see how a larger group can react to the needs of one of their members is important. And also to look at getting some paid care into the home so that everybody in the home is able to continue participating in the workforce for a whole variety of reasons, particularly for baby boomers, because they're in their peak earning years and retirement planning years, and that's always a struggle for us, is to balance the expense of having someone, provide care intermittently and have the family arrange itself so they're able to support that care being provided. So so people do not become impoverished as a result of their caregiving responsibilities.
Elaine says that she'd been taking care of her 94-year-old mother for 5 years full time. Very hard and expensive to hire supplemental caregivers so she can get a break. They're expensive. They have 4-hour minimums. And that, of course, is the huge challenge. Home health care workers are not highly paid, but boy, the hours add up really fast. Very difficult to pay for in-home care. Anaheim Chris writes on the page, I think we'll see a transition back to community as aging boomers look to one another for assistance in the activities of daily living and monitoring for crises. Very interesting point. And Kathleen Kelly, is that something do you think the boomer generation is going to figure out some new ways to provide care for each other?
I think that's correct. If I could make a comment here, I think we're going to go back to the Golden Girls television show for some lessons. And that's exactly what people are talking about, is how do you connect people either by a shared housing situation or be able to extend it throughout a community. And there is a movement called the Village Movement, which does precisely that, which is to network people together in a larger community area and be able to share and support services between those members. And it's starting slowly, but it certainly is gaining in the imagination and the planning of many baby boomers, which is how do we do a reciprocal caregiving arrangements so not just one person can be burdened, but it can be shared over many.
Christine writes on the page, I'm caring for my mother who has dementia. She's incapable of caring for her medical, financial, housing needs. I have no children. I'm worried I might need this level of care, but I have nobody to rely on. Catherine in Long Beach, you're on Air Talk.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to make the comment. My mother's actually an activities director for an outpatient Alzheimer's dementia facility in Claremont, which partners with the Pilgrim's Place. And their model is essentially the same thing, the way you'd bring a toddler to a daycare. It's a facility that handles from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Dementia patients. And essentially, it really works to partner with families so that they can drop off their elderly parent in the morning and then keep them during the day. And it has approximately, I think, one caregiver for every 10 patients. And I mean, that blueprint, they're expanding now throughout the United States, and they're getting their funding mostly from the state at this point. But I think kind of to bridge that gap between, do you make the choice of putting your parent in a long-term facility, or can you keep them at home and have them in a daycare center like this? I think that's the where we're headed. And I think that program that my mother runs is absolutely fabulous in demonstrating that.
Catherine, that's great. Thank you so much for sharing that. You know, I've been thinking for the past few years that an investment, if you're looking for a business opportunity, opening up senior daycare facilities like you're describing, either for people with Alzheimer's dementia or just other seniors, get out of the house but have a place that provides, you know, some sort of care and support, would be a tremendous help to families who are providing the care themselves. Donald Redfoot?
Absolutely. Adult day services have been crucial in enabling many people to continue in the workforce. As Kathy noted earlier, we see too many caregivers giving up jobs at tremendous cost to them, not only in terms of their current incomes, but their long-term security in terms of building up pension and Social Security benefits. And so adult day services can be a crucial help to those who need that support and that relief so that they can continue occupations. But I should note, if I understand correctly, that adult day services have been targeted for very significant budget cuts in California. And so it's the kind of thing that is a terrible blow to family caregivers who rely on that service.
Of course, you know, as baby boomers age, one doesn't know what the financial state of California will be and whether there's just going to be so much demand that there has to be more support that goes into it, if that's a less expensive way of being able to provide the services. Susan in Beverly Hills says, as a single baby boomer without kids, best thing I did for myself was long-term care insurance. Kathleen Kelly, do you support purchasing it?
Of course, I think long-term care insurance is a wise decision to make, depending upon your financial situation, your extended family, and so on. I have to point out that recently the underwriting rules have been changed for women, so long-term care insurance for women has gone up significantly in terms of the premiums and costs. But in your financial planning for the future, and particularly for those individuals that are in their 50s, not yet turned 60, that if you're going to look at long-term care insurance, this is the time to do it. Because once you, as you get older, the premiums, of course, go up significantly. But it's something to consider.
Maurice in Pasadena, welcome to Air Talk.
Hi, Larry. On that note, on your channel, and a great show as always, does adding the adding that benefit to existing Medicare benefits, Medicare will pay for 100 days worth of skilled nursing, but the majority of care is custodial, which is an out-of-pocket expense. Why not pass legislation that pay for that some portion of that care on the Medicare benefit, similar to what they did for the drug benefit?
Donald Redfoot, what do you think?
Well, there have been various proposals along that line to add some kind of long-term care benefit, which currently does not exist in Medicare. I need to clarify the comment. While they do pay for some skilled nursing care, that really is only post-hospital care. They provide it for rehabilitation. It's usually for very short term. It's not the kind of ongoing long-term support that people need for the person you talked about who's dealing with a mother with dementia. You're talking about years and years of commitment, not 100 days of post-hospital care. And so right now there is no public benefit like Medicare, except for Medicaid, which requires that you impoverish yourself first. And then, even then, to provide home and community services, services in the home, is sporadic and spotty at best. And so this is one of the things that a National Commission on Long-Term Care is now addressing here in Washington. And one of the reasons we wanted to highlight this issue about the dwindling number of caregivers for the future, because we've got to prepare for that.
All right. Barbara says she had a friend who got long-term care insurance 15 years ago, but the premiums have gone up so much she hadn't been able to afford to continue the policy, so it's like she wasted the policy. Donald Redfoot, I mean, that is the challenge, is that, you know, as the premiums, if they're going to be increasing, that it may be people can't afford them in the future.
Oh, it is an enormous problem. And while long-term care insurance can be a good solution for some, the fact of the matter is it's unaffordable for most people. And as you noted in the example, we've seen too many cases of huge increases in the cost, and they come often just at a time when the person may be in their later years, when they actually may be needing the policy, and yet their income has gone down, they've exhausted their resources. A colleague of mine has a mother who's over 90. She just got hit by a 60% increase in her policy. This at a time when she's experiencing some dementia and is needing more care. You know, these are the kind of things that have been problematic with private insurance.
Mm-hmm. And Kathleen Kelly, is there just limited regulation of those premiums?
Yes, there's limited regulation. You have to go back, and in fact, many of the companies in California stopped writing policies and then resubmitted their new policy structure based on a clear understanding of the underwriting conditions, particularly for women. And that's what's happened in the past year. It's really, as I said, it's good in concept. But you have to be very careful, and this is why it's important to talk to somebody who understands the long-term care insurance industry and the issues around the increase in premiums. It's really important to take into consideration when you sign up.
All right. And real quickly, Don Redfoot was talking about, training family members, giving them the kind of support to do this. Are there formal ways for family members, just real quickly, get that kind of training about how to provide care?
There are a number of community organizations like ours, and particularly throughout California, that do provide some training in direct service, direct care provision and skills and techniques. What we haven't done really is scale those efforts to meet the demand for the caregivers that are already existing, what we call the informal workforce.
Yeah.
We really need to scale our efforts a lot better to reach them.
Thank you both for talking about the challenge and possible ways to deal with the shortage of caregivers for aging baby boomers. Don Redfoot of AARP, lead author of the report, The Aging of the Baby Boom and the Growing Care Gap. And our thanks to Kathleen Kelly, executive director of the Family Caregiver Alliance. Have a terrific afternoon. Now, tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, we have special coverage for you of the 50th anniversary observance of the Civil Rights March on Washington, speeches including President Obama. That's tomorrow here on KPCC.